What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Jones and Keefe live at Fenway Park. A reminder that today is your last chance to enter the Red Sox Foundation's 50-50 raffle, which is currently over $37,000. And that will share proceeds with the Jimmy Fund. Fans of Massachusetts who are over 18 can buy tickets at redsox.com/5050 now through the end of the eighth inning of tonight's Red Sox game against the Baltimore Orioles. It is day two, WEEI Ness and Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. You can see the tote board there if you're watching on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, up over $3.5 million. Continue to donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, online, jimmyfund.org, or you can text KCancer to 56512 to give any amount. We are joined now by Carolyn Hampson of Attleboro here on day two of the telethon. Carolyn, thanks for joining us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We were just talking to you a little bit off the air. Rich and myself were over at Dana-Farber a few weeks back, and we got to see the young adult program over there, which you said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, is an awesome program. We got to see a little bit of it firsthand. What can you tell us about your experience there and what the program has done?
Yeah, so I think the young adult program at Dana-Farber it existed, but they just got the lounge, like, I think 2 years ago, which has been phenomenal in terms of there's resources there. There's someone, a patient navigator, that if you ever need someone to talk to, you can always just talk to. And Megan's phenomenal, and now Mary. And then the community there is also really great. Like, I just stop in there. My friends are there, like, you know, because we're all there, like, in between appointments. And especially, like, with cancer, you have so many, like, you have your, like, radiation oncologist appointment, then you have your, like, your surgical oncologist. You have so many appointments that a lot of us just hang out in the lounge in between. And, like, people in the lounge were there when I found out that I relapsed. And, like, I just had friends. Like, it was just immediate. Like, I had friends. I didn't have to go anywhere. I just had friends in the lounge waiting for me, which I think is one of the really amazing things about the young adult program, is that there is the space where young adults not only connect, but, like, we're there for each other.
We heard Liam Hendricks goes there a lot. Unfortunately, he's hurt right now, not pitching for the Red Sox, but you've had a chance to meet him a few times.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really great. I got a for Players Week and decorate his shoes. And there was also the pair of shoes that hung out at the Yap Lounge that we all got assigned to.
Very cool. And then you had a chance to go to the spring training trip too.
Yes.
What was that like?
That was really phenomenal, getting to go to Florida as, like, just, like, a great distraction from treatment, and then also just meeting everyone in the clinic and getting to, like, because we all see each other, like, every day.
Yeah.
Some of us, but, like, getting to, like, see each other and see the nurses outside the clinic was a lot of fun, and, like, made friends there, and we still, like, we text and we hang out, like, at clinic, and, like, sometimes schedule our appointments together.
Wow. Well, and I think this is why, you know, we have people like you, Carolyn, on. Because you can hear, again, firsthand, you were on the trip to Florida. Money from this telethon and donations to the Jimmy Fund, that helps fund that trip that Lisa puts on every year. The space that you have, the young adult program, but the room there that you guys have, and we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, and Liam being able to come by, Liam Hendricks being able to come by and talk to the different patients. You have your own space. It's not just, well, I'm around 5 and 6 year olds who maybe I don't necessarily have the same life experiences going on right now. I'm not around 60, 70, 80 year olds. So it's a good place to go and see your friends, as you said. And that's another place where this money goes. So we encourage you to donate toll free, 877-738-1234, or you can text KCancer 56512 again to give any amount. Now, what can you tell? You shared some details, but what can you tell us about your story and why you're here today as part of the telethon?
Yeah, so I was initially diagnosed in January 2021, and that was in Oregon, and I did treatment in Oregon, living with my parents. And I was in my sophomore year of college at that point. I have now graduated from Emmanuel College.
Awesome.
So then when I, like, finished treatment, I took a year off of school, but when I finished treatment, I, like, went back to Boston. I was still bald, and I transferred all my care to Dana-Farber because I wanted to be at college, and I didn't want to have to go home every couple months for scans. And so that's how I ended up at Dana-Farber. And then when I graduated, it was like, well, this is a great area. Like, Boston's amazing. So stayed in the area. And then when I relapsed, it's like because of Dana-Farber that I was able to stay living with me and my roommate instead of like moving back with my parents. Like, I think if I had relapsed at any other center, I would have had to move home. But it is like the incredible support, both the community and like the resource staff at Dana-Farber, that enabled me to stay like living out here in Massachusetts where all my friends are.
I read in your bio you had a very strange reaction to radiation. Is that true? You had?
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us about this?
I ended up with chronic hiccups.
Oh,
which,
my God.
Like, out of all, like, the, like, side effects, they don't quite tell you, and it's always reassuring when your doctor's like, oh, I haven't seen this since residency. And you're like, oh, well, I'm glad you've seen this.
Yeah, that can't possibly be a good thing to hear.
So wait, you had the hiccups nonstop for months?
Yeah, I've had them since December, but I take muscle relaxers.
Okay, okay.
And they're a little bit better now, and, yeah, but...
That's not what you want to hear from the doctors over there. Now, I was reading that you you also are a Lego builder. Is that right? Okay,
yeah.
So now, Keith, you talk often about like the Millennium Falcon and crazy things.
The Star Wars ones are incredible.
What sort of Legos do you like to build?
I like to free build, and I think one of my like proud accomplishments is every year I go to the used Lego stores and I get like a gallon of green Legos. Like, I buy Legos by the gallon.
That's the standard Legos.
Every year I my tree gets bigger because I have more Legos, and this past year my tree was 68 inches.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
Year the goal is 6 feet.
So free build, the goal is 6 feet. The free building is
so that's
wild.
Someone who's creative. Well, I would just take whatever's in the box based on the thing.
I can't even follow the directions. I build like easy ones for my son. My son is seven. And I build, like, the easy ones, and I have to go back
stuck.
Oh, I built the thing backwards. I have to start over again, and he's like, when is it going to be built, Dad? I'm like, I don't know later. I haven't figured out how to do it. So free building Legos. That's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. So as of now, your treatment, your sort of your day-to-day, what can you tell us about that?
So I actually just completed, like, my relapse protocol treatment and moving into, like, survivorship, which is kind of intimidating because, like, I know from first-line treatment that kind of feels like there can be, like, a big drop, but my Dana-Farber team already has appointment schedules me. That way I don't, you know, it's not just kind of like being shoved off a cliff. It can feel like being shoved off a cliff, but I know that, like, at Dana-Farber, they're definitely going to prevent that feeling.
Yeah.
And then also, like, plans with, like, my YAP friends of just, like, some of us, like, there's a group of us, and we're, like, all going to work on our grad school applications together. And so just the, I guess, like, in the transitioning from, like, just all treatment, survival mode, going to be like transitioning to the, I guess, more community aspect of like living and into that like survivorship, like looking for the future mode.
Before we let you go here today, Carolyn, what would you like to let any listeners know or be made aware of here with the Jimmy Fund and maybe even their own personal health?
I think the importance of community is definitely like highlighted at Jimmy Fund. I will say, like, sometimes I go to appointments alone. I often have friends, but sometimes I go to appointments alone, and, like, other parents will just adopt me and bring me snacks. And so just when you think of, like, Jimmy Fund, like think of the, like, amazing community and the importance of community to get through any health challenges.
Well, that's awesome. And, again, you can donate toll-free, 877-738-1234. Text to give any amount by texting KCANCER to 56512. It's been a little while since we've moved that tote board, so continue to donate there. We want to continue to get that number up. Carolyn Hampson, thank you so much for joining us here on day two.
And you're going to the game tonight, right?
Oh, yeah, you are going to the game, right? Enjoy.
Good. Perfect weather for it. Another good one. Hopefully a win tonight.
Yeah, hopefully they turn things around a little bit, but that should be an exciting one for sure. Thank you again for coming on and sharing your story with us here today. Continue to donate online, jimmyfund.org as well. A reminder, every gift, no matter the size, makes a difference in the lives of adults and children being treated at Dana-Farber. 87 cents on every dollar raised supports patient care and research for children and adults at Dana-Farber. The donations there are critical So please continue to do that. We'll take a quick timeout. Trending update here from Nick, and we'll come back with Carson Dorn.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Day two, 23rd annual WEEI NESN Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. We want to continue to encourage you to donate toll-free at 877-738-1234. A lot of you have been so generous donating through this point. We really want to beat the number from a year ago. It was almost $4 million. We're closing in on that. Through massive, massive generosity. The Hail match, we hit that in the middle of the Red Sox game last night.
Yeah, that was
fun
to watch during the middle of the game. It went from like just under a million, then it was like 1.2, then it was like 2.2.
All of a sudden. All of a sudden.
Pretty good. Now we're at over 3.5 and counting, so I don't want to jinx it, but it feels like we're ahead of the pace from last year.
Yep.
We have to be ahead of the pace from last year.
I think so for sure, but continue to call in there. Your generosity, the generosity from BJ's Wholesale Club, amazing as well, and that's money that's continuing to come in. So toll-free 877-738-1234, jimmyfund.org online, and you can text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. It's just a text away. To help us out here, I keep circling back to what Charlie Davies said yesterday. I rewatched it on social media this morning. I thought he gave a great answer, just kind of, you know, out of the blue. It wasn't anything we drew out of him. He just said, guys, it's if you can, and not everyone can, but if you can, it's a dollar. It's a couple of dollars that can help in a huge, huge, huge way. So we appreciate you again. And again, it's just a text away at 56512. Text KCANCER there. We are going to check in. A little bit later on in the hour with Matthew Wright. We have a little bit of time, Keith, to well dissect what went down in the last 24 hours with the New England Patriots. This happened while we were on the air yesterday. Elliot Wolf gave an answer that has created quite a few headlines, not just here in New England, but also throughout the NFL, that the Patriots would indeed, think about trades to upgrade their roster. They're talking to all 31 teams, not named the New England Patriots, and he even answered at one point, they would consider giving up a first or a second round pick if they felt like that player would improve the club. So that's Elliot Wolf, who I'm not even sure how much power he actually has and or influence he actually has.
Yeah.
But speaking on behalf of the Patriots, that was his answer. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, something that you could say because it's sort of like we're going to leave all options open and it would have to be somebody that meets that criteria. Like if you're going to trade a first round pick in the NFL, it is for an all-pro player. And not only that, but an all-pro player like directly in their prime. You know, it felt like first-round picks being traded was a little bit more common a couple of years ago with guys like Steph Diggs and A.J. Brown and Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams. And then that's sort of eased up a little bit, and it's more of the little bit older guys going for, like, second-round picks and things like that. But I at least like being open to that. They should be. Now, they have to actually do it before you, like, really would give them credit for it.
That was Wiggy's thing this morning, right? Wiggy's you got to show me. I don't need to hear the words anymore. I need some action.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, the Red Sox famously have been, you know, interested in a lot of, you know, big-time players, and they haven't always gotten them. And you're like, well, they were interested. It's like, well, how interested were they? But there are a handful of guys right now that meet that criteria that would probably, if they get traded from their teams, they're having contract issues with their teams, it would probably cost minimum second round in the case of some of them. And then in the case of one specific one, I would say a first round pick.
Okay, well, let's stick with that for a minute. You're talking about Micah Parsons?
Yeah, he would be the first round pick one because he is...
He's worth a first round pick.
Yes.
I think so too.
He's smack dab in the middle of his prime. He's just looking to get paid in Dallas. If he's not the best defensive player in the year or in the league, he's close. So, yeah, that you wouldn't be able to get him for anything less.
Well, I feel like we talked about this offseason when we knew it was the number four pick. Yeah. Now, admittedly, what was viewed, I'd say, largely as a down draft. But I think both you and I were like, oh, Myles Garrett for the number four pick?
Yeah,
oh, Mike Parsons for the number four pick? We do that. And that's knowing it's fourth. You don't even know what it's going to be this year. We hope if they have the type of year you're forecasting them for, 10 wins.
Oh, yeah,
I'm forecasting
like
them for nine. Yeah, you hope it's around pick 20, not pick four. But I think Micah Parsons would be worth the first rounder. I couldn't see giving up that much for McLaurin or Hendrickson.
No, I don't think he would have to. I think if Washington can't sign McLaurin, he's 30 now, so I don't think it would be a first-round pick. He's been very, very good. Like, I think he is a number one receiver, but he's not of that Jefferson, Chase, CeeDee Lamb. He's not in that category.
And he's not worth the Patriots overpaying a first-round pick in your mind, even though that's a much bigger position in need than edge rusher.
So it's one of those things where I don't think you would have to, but I also wouldn't – like, I wouldn't lose my mind if they did that. Like, if they that'd be very aggressive, maybe a slight overpay, but sometimes you have to overpay. And this has been a position, and we'll see with Kyle Williams, that this whole franchise has not been able to draft. And, you know, you go back to when Davante Adams got traded from Green Bay to the Raiders, and he went for a first and second round pick. And people are like, oh, that's a lot. Well, that year, it would have been Cole Strange and Tyquan Thornton. So, like, if you play it out like that, and I know that doesn't always work, because, like, another year it could be Christian Gonzalez.
Well, or if they just didn't trade back, it could have been Trent McDuffie and maybe Sky Moore, maybe not that great, but at least McDuffie.
But, right, like, there's always examples of that. And, you know, you look at some of these drafts, and yes, they got Christian Gonzalez with a first-round pick, but they've also gotten, you know, N'Keal Harry and Cole Strange, and, you know, we'll see what TBD on Will Campbell. Like, those are all first-round picks. If any of those guys have the career that Terry McLaurin has or Trey Hendrickson has, then, like, that's a win. Like, then you hit on that pick. And because there's been ups and downs with the Patriots receivers, we've been kind of riding that wave all through training camp. It's still not great, right?
No.
Even the best case scenario of it is not great. You could add Terry McLaurin to that pile, and then you'd be in a much better situation going forward.
Who do you think is most likely to move out of Parsons, McLaurin, Hendrickson?
Maybe Hendrickson?
It feels like he's on the verge of moving.
Probably Hendrickson. And that one also was weird. It seemed like he was definitely not going to be there. Then it's like, oh, they're going to figure something out. Because that's a cheap organization, but they paid Burrow, they paid Chase, they paid Higgins, right? Is he franchise? No, they paid him.
No, they paid Higgins.
I don't think Hendrickson. They'll probably try to see what they can get for him. And that's one where I would take him. I would take all those guys. I probably wouldn't throw in a first-rounder, though, for Hendrickson. As good as he is. He's very, very good.
He's 30?
Yeah, I mean, he might be.
I think he's right around there if he's not 30 yet.
So, yeah, I wouldn't do that for him.
Me neither. Daniel Jeremiah yesterday tweeted out, with Drake May on a rookie deal, and this is somewhat what Elliot Wolf referenced when he was speaking to the media, it makes sense for New England to be interested in trading for an expensive star player. He says Hendrickson or McLaurin makes sense, but I'd call the Cowboys first and shoot my shot on Micah Parsons, which we both would co-sign on.
Yep.
Diana Rossini came out today, and she said, and I know you're a big fan of her work,
I mean, she's like a 50-50 hit rate here.
The Patriots, like every team, are constantly looking for possible ways to improve their roster, but from conversations that I've been having, I don't sense that New England is close on a deal for any of the NFL's disgruntled stars at this time. So there's a lot of wiggle room in that report.
Yeah. She also said Odell Beckham was going to take a lot of time to sign, and it was going to be one of the following 8 teams. And then he later signed, like, a minute later with a team not on that list. So I mean, I would take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
He also famously told us the Patriots love Jarrett Stidham.
Sure. Here's what I think, though. Here's how I translate what happened in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Elliot Wolf comes out, and he's like, sure, we'd trade the pick for any of those
guys. And she's like, no.
Yeah, well,
and
she goes to Vrabel, or she goes to Stretch, or she goes to Ryan Cowden, who I believe is talking to the media today. I actually was just looking to see if there were any updates. I think he was scheduled to talk today. Maybe he already has. Again, we're not as up on the news cycle as we typically are here in the middle of the telethon, but I think he's scheduled to talk today. Maybe she reached out to one of them, and they're like, yeah, we don't know what Elliot's talking about. The guy has no say.
No.
I find that weird, too. It's like, and I think you have to make, like, the coordinators available. That's why Terrell Williams talked earlier today. I think you have to make personnel people available. That's why Cowden's talking. That's why Wolf talked yesterday. I just think it's weird he's out there talking like he's in charge. Like, he still said the final say is his. He said that yesterday.
Yeah, it's not, though.
Yeah, I don't think anybody reasonably believes that.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, there's sort of a change. It happened years ago in baseball where they still have the GM title, and the GM used to be the guy that made all the moves, or gal, and now it is not. Now it is like fifth in the chain of command. It's sort of the same thing with the Patriots. But, yeah, he's not making final say. But this is also one of those things where you're like, it doesn't make any sense if you're Elliot Wolf and you're like, no, we would not do that. Like, because you don't know what potential trade might come up, and now you're the team that won't trade a first-round pick. And then if you do, you've, like, just completely lied about it. You've caught
a
lie.
That is definitely
so fair. My prediction would be, no, they don't, right? But, like, I'm glad they're open to it. And who knows? Maybe all three of these guys end up re-signing with their teams. Who do you think is the most likely to re-sign?
Re-sign McLaurin.
Yeah, okay.
Like, no question. I'd have Parsons right in the middle. I think I'm now to the point where I think Hendrickson is going to move.
Yeah.
I don't think it's to the Patriots, but I think he's going to move. And I think the Patriots should be willing to move a first-round pick for players of that caliber. I don't know if I specifically would move it for Hendrickson. I like your answer about McLaurin. Like, is that fair value? Would you have to give up a first? No, I probably wouldn't.
No.
But I'm also not going to kick and scream if they trade a first-round pick to add to a receiver room that we're all stamping our feet about how it's lacking.
I think it also comes down to how good you think the team's going to be. Because if it was like the Patriots from the past and you knew they were picking 29 through 32, I think everybody would probably do it. If the fear is you're picking in like the top 10, top 15 again, you're like, I don't want to give up that pick for that, right? So that's a little bit different. But if you believe that with an addition like McLaurin, you push yourself into the playoffs, then all right, that pick's not going to really kill you as much. And you re-sign him, so now you have this guy to pair up with Drake May for a number of years. And to Daniel Jeremiah's point, which is one that we've mentioned a bunch of times, Drake May is on a rookie deal. Anytime you have a quarterback who starts for you on their rookie deal, that's when you get them the $30 million receiver. And then by the time you have to pay the quarterback, maybe that guy's sort of at the end of it. Maybe or you can move on from him.
Well, all I know what I don't want to hear, and I give Kraft credit for spending this offseason. They spent this offseason. They mostly spent on defense, not necessarily the way I would have spent, but they did spend. I'll give them credit for that. What I don't want to hear now, because you did hear all this stuff about the rookie quarterback deal. Wolf referenced that. You just mentioned the Jeremiah tweet referencing that. What I don't want to hear is, well, we got to pay Drake, and we got to pay Gonzo. And like, no, I get that you got to pay all those guys. I'm not telling you not to pay them. I want them on the team. I thought the whole idea was to capitalize before you paid them. Capitalize and add to the team while they are on their rookie deal. So that's something that I wouldn't think is satisfactory if that's something they wind up pushing out there. It is day two of the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. I want to remind you, you can become a member of Dana-Farber's President's Circle when you give $1,500 or more by making a commitment at that level. You lead by example, you help save lives, and you shape Dana-Farber's future. As a member, you'll receive updates on the latest news and developments at Dana-Farber, plus other benefits. You can donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, online, jimmyfund.org, or you can text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. Jones and Keefe brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. For all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies at Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. Now, Keefe, we have yesterday's update, and this kind of played out in real time while we were on the air.
Yeah.
That Drake May had another crummy practice.
He did, yeah.
That's after
a couple of picks to Robert Spillane.
Yeah, both to Robert Spillane.
Not known for his interception prowess.
He's not. Now, if you want to spin it positively, I do like that his name continues to pop up everywhere.
He's good.
So, yeah. If you want to take it positively, it's probably not what I was planning on doing here, but like, good. He's popping up. We're seeing his name. They spent money on him. Yeah. I didn't really even, I'll be honest, I didn't know a ton about him before they brought him in. He's got a background with Vrabel going back to his days in Tennessee.
Yeah.
He has a little bit of overlap with McDaniels, right, during his time in Vegas.
I think he was there
2 years.
His first year, yeah.
So it's a guy the coaching staff knows pretty well. The positive spin on this would be, well, he continues to make plays and their defense should be better, et cetera. Fine. I'll acknowledge some of that. How about Drake May and the trajectory of where things are going? He didn't look great against backups in the preseason game, and now this yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know how you can spin it positive. I mean, we've been each day – I mean, I guess you can with Robert Spillane. But I mean, like, for the offense
Drake,
specifically, yeah. it probably was at a high point, the joint practice against Washington. Up until the last play.
Right.
Honestly, that might have been the turning point at that moment.
And that was a significant portion of practice. It was 45 seconds at the 25 or whatever.
No.
Go get in the running clock. Go get in the end zone. Go do it. And like the most significant possession of that joint practice, it didn't go well.
It did not. And we've decided as a show that we are going to take each day, training camp-wise, as it goes. And if they're good that day, we're going to say they were good.
Yeah.
If they were bad that day, we're going to say it's bad.
That's the only fair way to do it. Yeah.
We're not going
to
skip past all of training camp and all of preseason. And, yeah, certain things you have to, unfortunately, grade a little bit on a curve, right? If you're going up against the Vikings second stringers, okay, or the Commanders second stringers, whatever. But, yeah, right now the offense is not in a spot where I think you feel like, oh, like look out, like they're going to be better than expected. It's like, well, they might be as expected. Or maybe even a little bit worse, because we're not asking for the world for the offense.
No.
They're like a middle-of-the-pack offense. I think it's a guaranteed playoff team. It's like if they're not, and there's, you know, more and more turnovers, and if, you know, Steph Diggs isn't anything close to a number one receiver, and if the offensive line has a hard time protecting Drake May, because that's the other thing. You know, we weren't there at the practice. Was Drake May, did he have to, like, run out of there quick? Did he get rid of the ball quicker than he wanted? Or I don't
Good
know.
Good question.
I don't know. I didn't see the write-up
I
that.
The write-ups that I saw, is it was actually the right side of the line that struggled yesterday. So, Wilson, just to get you up to speed.
Yeah, but Morgan Moses probably isn't even out there, right?
Well, I think he was for portions of it. So, Wilson was back as the top team left guard with Ben Brown rotating in. And, yeah, I think some of the communication issues were on Wenu and Moses on that side, I think. I'd have to go back and double-check, but I believe it was.
Yeah, no, not good. I mean, I think it doesn't mean, like, oh, they're in trouble for the entire season or they're not going to be able to turn it around. But, no, as of what we've seen, is not trending in the right direction for the offense. It is.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. And, yeah, I was hoping to come out of that Minnesota game feeling better about the first-team offense. I wanted May to play more than he did. I wanted him to look better than he did when he was out there. And I certainly wanted it to go positively on the practice field yesterday.
Is Henderson like the only real bright spot on offense right
Chisholm,
now?
Chisholm, who, by the way, Chisholm, okay. I guess, was this is from Reese, quote-unquote, aggressively riding a bike yesterday, Keith.
Well, that's good.
That is good.
You don't want to passively ride a bike.
No.
You want to be aggressive.
So I was a little worried about whatever happened in the game against the Vikings.
Does that mean it's one of the ones that also does the hands back and forth?
Ooh, maybe.
I feel like that's, you go only go do that.
He was standing up. He wasn't just sitting. He was standing. Yeah, that's when good. He's going through hills is what he was doing. Him and Henderson are like the two.
That's kind
of
it.
Positive updates on the offense. The other side of that coin, you mentioned his name earlier. It's another day where I didn't read anything about Steph Diggs.
No.
You know?
Kind of quiet.
Very quiet.
Maybe too quiet.
So, you know.
Somebody wake him up. It's not good.
I don't like, and maybe these go hand in hand. Like, maybe we haven't even connected these enough where we're like, what's going on with Drake May? Why is the offense sort of trending down as we go along? Well, maybe it directly correlates to the guy who you thought was going to be the number one receiver, and he's looking more and more average and just blending in more and more and standing out less day after day after day.
Yeah, I don't know what I've gone all over the map, like with trying to predict what kind of season Steph Diggs is going to have. And part of me says, all right, well, he's a veteran guy. You know, how much does he need to be involved in all of the offense, you know, throughout camp? But it's also a new team. You know, and I think an interesting exercise would have been, you know, what was he doing in Houston, you know, this time last year? It was a new team. Now, he wasn't coming off an injury, but that doesn't seem to be the issue with him. It's not about health, but it's like, all right, it's a new team. How much did he do? How productive was he last year in Houston? Because then he was on pace to having another 1,000-yard season. Not, you know, not a record-breaking 1,500-yard lead-the-league-in-catches season, but a very good season and one that's better than anything the Patriots receivers have had over the last 5 years. But it seemed like he burned hot, and then it's been real quiet since. And so I don't, is he going to be able to flip the switch and turn it back on? That remains to be seen.
That's something that I'm worried about for sure. And again, it probably directly correlates with Drake May and the way the offense has been going here these last few practices. It is, again, day two of the WEEI Ness and Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. Coming up on Jones and Keefe later today, we're going to check in with Tommy Curran for his weekly spot. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. He joins us a little less than an hour from now. We're going to talk to Lou Merlone a little less than 2 hours from now at 1:30. And Lucas Giolito of the Red Sox is going to join us at the tail end of the show, 1:45-ish here on Jones and Keefe. I also want to remind you at 3:30 during WEEI Afternoons, Mego sat down with both Alex Cora and Joe Mazzulla.
How about that?
Good get.
Real good get.
Going to be able
to... Couple of championship coaches / managers right there.
Be able to chat with both of them.
That's excellent.
So that'll air live at 3:30 on WEEI Afternoons. I do want to remind everybody that every gift, no matter the size, does make a difference in the lives of adults and children being treated at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. To donate, you can call toll-free 877-738-1234, online, jimmyfund.org, or you can text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. 87 cents on every dollar raises support for patient care and research for children and adults at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. This telethon over the years, and this is year 23, it's $74 million
wow.
and counting.
Yeah.
It was almost $4 million last year. We're hoping to get over that number this year. We are at $3,520,280 here, approaching high noon on day two of the telethon. So please continue to donate again, 877-738-1234, or by texting KCANCER to 56512. When we come back, day two, we'll roll on and we will check in with Matthew Wright from Walpole.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Day two, WEEI Ness and Jimmy Fun Radio Telethon presented by Arbella Insurance. You see there, we are closing in on last year's total. If you're watching on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, up over $3.5 million. Continue to donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, or you can text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. We continue to hear stories throughout the course of the last few days through all the shows here. Anon Jones and Keith joining us now is Matt Wright of Walpole and Dr. Robert Seufer joining us here. Guys, thanks so much for stopping by here today.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, Matt, we were making some small talk here while you were sitting here in the last break, and I mentioned to you that I'm not sure I've ever met anybody, maybe you're going to surpass this, that watches more stuff, movies, television, all of it, than Rich Keefe. I know you're a big movie guy as well. So I don't know what you've been watching or maybe Keith has been watching, but I feel like
this is our time to bond.
I'm gonna
take a lap.
I'm going to know none of these things that you guys watch, but I'm interested to hear it.
Yes, hopefully we see the numbers go up as we talk about movies. big cinephile. Paul Thomas Anderson, Quentin Tarantino, Terrence Malick.
Yes, the new Paul Thomas Anderson later this year.
Very psyched. IMAX, filmed it in IMAX.
Yes.
Saw the new Spike Lee. It was pretty good.
Oh, how was that? That just came out, right?
It was good, not great. I love a messy Spike Lee movie, though. He just throws a lot out, and there's a ton of style, and then you kind of go, what?
Okay.
But I dig it.
All right.
Sinners was great this year. Yes. Eddington, Ari Aster's new film was great this year. So, yeah, we're back, baby. We're so back.
Movies are back.
We're back.
Movies are back. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
How about that?
Superman was like a great summer blockbuster, made some money. Like, we're going back to the theaters. We're psyched.
Things are great. Yeah, you really can't go wrong with that. But, all right, tell us what happened, why you're here, when you knew something was up. Take us through your origin story.
Yeah, well, I'm maybe too much of an open book, so here it goes.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, was as the gentleman in the audience might know, was readjusting, and then felt, and I go, oh, that kind of hurts, and then like a day later ballooned up like a grapefruit, and so, you know, it went to urgent care, which shall not be named, tried this antibiotic. Well, that didn't do anything. Well, here's an ultrasound. Well, here's this, and no one could really figure out what it was, and then got set up with a wonderful provider who pretty much kind of like laid out what was going on and said, you know, we're going to have to take that bad boy off. And, you know, my first reaction was, hi, how are you? What's your name again? We haven't even met. Let me shake your hand first before you tell me that, you know, one of them's got to go.
Yeah.
But he was right. And then look what happened. So then I got set up with just the fantastic people at Dana-Farber and my oncologist, Dr. D'Angelo. It was wonderful and incredible. And then got to transplant with Dr. Seufer, who is the guy. He is the guy. This guy rules.
A guy.
The guy.
The guy behind the guy behind. No. He is the guy. So went through a lot. Went through a pretty intense hospital stay, had some complications along the way. Got out and was ready for... getting ready for transplant, hit some other roadblocks along the way, got RSV, and that kind of did me in for a little bit, wasn't receiving treatment for a while, and then relapsed. And I'll always remember the phone call I got from Dr. Seufer when those numbers came in, really bad news and probably hard news to deliver. And he was very confident in the phone call. And I always remember he goes, it's not a matter of if you're going to transplant, it's a matter of when. We're going to get you right. To get you into transplant. That kind of like I needed to hear someone who knows what he's talking about, be confident and calm and cool, and here we are.
Well, so Dr. Seufer, I want to pick up with that because one of the notes here, and I guess, you know, it makes sense, you're waiting for a stem cell transplant, and one of the things that Matt wasn't just dealing with is, you know, the actual physical symptoms and side effects and everything else, but also just having to deal with the waiting for the actual transplant. So what is that process like for a patient and from your end?
Well, in terms of Matt's story, he really has had a lot of curveballs thrown at him prior to the transplant. Complications from the initial during the initial therapy, then infectious complications that led to delays of the transplant, and then the disease coming back, which forced us to treat him again to get him ready for the transplant. And he's, you know, he knocked back every shot. He was not fooled by the curve. He managed to keep his eye on the ball and hit it out. And so, you got to love and respect someone like that who can just keep banging it away. It is difficult to get bad. Obviously, it's devastating to get bad news. And it's devastating to think when you're going in one direction, suddenly you get a phone call and say, well, we have to take a right turn, a 90-degree right turn. And the key is to make patients understand that even though we're making a 90-degree right turn, we're going to make another 90-degree left turn and get back on the road and move forward. And that's exactly what's happened with Matt. So I'm delighted. It's been great taking care of him because he's very shy.
Yeah.
he's hard to pull him out of his shell.
Yeah.
But I'm able to do that in some of our conversations.
How's it been for your wife and kids? You have two small kids.
Yes.
And I feel like even with 100% health, raising two small kids is nearly impossible. So dealing with everything you've been going through, how has that been?
It was tough. And, you know, I don't want my wife to get a big head so we can cut this.
Yeah, we won't hear this. Yeah.
But all credit to her. She was unbelievable with the kids. And we got a lot of help. You know, very, very lucky. Unlucky in a lot of ways and super lucky in the more important ways. My wife was incredible. Her parents were a huge help to us. My mother is huge. And, you know, the company I work for, you know, shout out Athena Health, they made sure that I had a job to come back to because that was, you know, always in the back of my head, insurance and how is this going to work? And so the senior leadership there really made sure and would check in on me kind of during it. So it was one less thing I had to worry about. And it's really just mindset, just getting the mindset right. And, you know, each day is a new day with challenges and things like that, but you just kind of keep moving forward. But yeah, all credit to my family and especially my wife who really helped with the kids and helped me. And she still does my pills. I have like pill boxes, like, you know, my grandfather.
Yeah.
And she still refills the pills. And sometimes I got to nudge her sometimes to, you know, get that Cyclovir in there.
To double down on that, really the importance of a caregiver can't be overstated. Really to have someone in your corner who's able to double check everything. They, you know, just make sure things are going in the right direction, get you to where you have to go is very important. And there have been plenty of studies that show that that's an important determinant of overall outcome for patients.
Now, Dr. Soifer, you've been a part of a few of these telethons over the years. How have you seen strides made, you know, specifically for ALL with research and treatments and things like that over the years?
Oh, ALL has been really revolutionized in the past decade. We have, when I started training, which was 40 years ago, we had sort of one series of regimens. It was the same thing, same thing, same thing, same thing. And then really about a decade ago, we came up with multiple new therapies. There's a drug called blinatumomab, a drug called inotuzumab, CAR T cells, which are, you know, sort of remarkable, just a remarkable achievement of harnessing the immune system, something we concentrate on at Dana-Farber. These have changed the face of ALL therapy to the point where actually now only a minority of patients with ALL get transplanted. When I started, it was the majority of patients getting transplanted. We reserve transplant only now for patients who really need it. In Matt's case, he did really need it. But we've had a great result with that.
Matt, how often do you look back and say, I can't believe I went through all this stuff? Or is it more of a, like, I'm moving forward?
Depends on the day.
Sure.
But both. Sometimes there's, you know, I couldn't walk up the steps when I first got there. And now I'm, you know, helping the kids get ready for school and back to work and kind of like digging into real life a little bit. And it's kind of weird to think like, oh my gosh, it wasn't that long ago that it was, you know, stuff got real. It is very much, you know, moving forward. And it's funny going back to Dana-Farber now because I go less frequently than I used to have to, which is great. But you always kind of get this weird, you know, but then you see people that have made such an impact on my life. Dr. Soifer, you know, Amy, the folks on floor 8, you know, Lynn, Sarah, like people that legitimately give me joy to see, catch up with. They know me, I know them, and it really just becomes a big part of your life. And even to the point where, like, the guy's doing valet, you know, they'll recognize my car and they go, hey, have a great appointment. And it's just like, man, it's every level of that place is unbelievable.
I just want to emphasize that Dana-Farber is a very special place. I mean, yeah, many places are special, but everybody from the president of the Farber to the person who's doing valet, everyone mm-hmm. knows why the patients are there. And, you know, I'm here as representing the Farber. I'm just the front guy. You know, there are many, 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 many people who I represent here. I'm just sitting here with this guy.
Topor just updated, by the way, 3,584,000 north of that.
It was the movie talk, man.
I think the movie talk moved it for sure.
Paul Thomas Anderson had
many of those fans out there.
Exactly. So please continue to donate toll free 877-738-1234, or you could text KCANCER to 56512 to give any amount. Red Sox game tonight, right?
Oh yeah, psyched.
You and the fam?
Yeah. This is a big. Didn't love last night's outcome.
No.
Big game, big series coming up against the Yankees. It's an exciting team. It's a fun team. It's a different vibe.
Yeah.
You know, young core. It's fun to get into. And I hear, you know, the more I'm kind of into this stuff, I get inspired by folks who use their time for good things. And you hear stories about, you know, guys like Jaren Duran and Bregman and these dudes who take time out of their day. These professional athletes who do stuff for Dana-Farber and do stuff for this community, which is really, really cool. But it's a very fun team. Psyched about this year, psyched about the next few years. Yeah.
I agree. It feels different, right? It feels like this is a playoff team, good vibe, a lot of entertaining players to watch. And to your point, like the connection they have, we had a girl on the show yesterday. She said Garrett Whitlock's her best friend.
She visits Garrett Whitlock,
and you hear that stuff, and it's pretty amazing.
It's fun to see like the community rally against rally with the team, and it's a different vibe. But yeah, very, very cool, very exciting.
Well, Matt, Dr. Soifer, thanks for coming on, sharing your stories, helping raise all this money on the tote board over there. Wouldn't be possible without you guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
Hey.
And thank you so much.
Thank you very much,
and thanks for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, this is great.
Thank
First
you.
Time, long time, by the way. So this is
awesome.
Okay, well, we do like to hear that. So you can donate toll-free, 877-738-1234, online, jimmyfund.org, or you can text, and sometimes that's the easiest way to do it. Simple text away, KCANCER to 56512. You can give any amount there. We're going to check in with Tommy Curran at 12:30, get some Pats talk in. On the way next, it'll be Kevin Haggis, Chief Scientific Officer at Dana-Farber.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.